Solitaire Rose Novelcast, After the Fall, Episode 9. The penultimate chapter, the next-to-last chapter in After the Fall. After the Fall is a zombie novel that takes place 5 years after civilization has fallen. To get you caught up, Ray, who has left a military facility to find out what is going on outside that facility, and Mark, who has been a scavenger, have met up with a series of pilgrims who are going to Graceland because they feel that Graceland will be a place that can be safe and protected. Also, Charles, Alice, and Angela are in a abandoned plantation with 4 children. They're preparing to leave because they don't feel it's safe anymore now that a zombie who can talk and think named Eddie has been in the area and has killed Charles's partner, Vic. This is where we pick up. Chapter 4. Ray actually enjoyed the marching. They weren't moving as fast as he would have if he were with his unit, but the simple act of walking with a clean destination was mesmerizing in ways he had forgotten. Mark, who he'd struck up a strong friendship with, had finally become more social than he was. He would walk along with someone he hadn't talked to in the morning, then move on to chat with someone else after lunch. It was almost a ritual with him, as if he was trying to get to know all 117 people in the group. How did Ray know it was 117 people in the group? He had counted them the first night, trying to get a good read on everyone. The second night, he spent an evening with a group of men dressed in military clothing, hoping to find out if they knew anything about any of the other army bases. He had learned they'd gotten the clothing from empty clothing stores because it was so durable. No one came from a base. The third day of the walk, he'd fallen into a comfortable routine of walking and listening to everyone around him. After his first day, no one else he hadn't talked to asked him where he was from, probably because what little information there was went through the group rapidly. The fourth day, they camped for the entire day because Ray had found a clean water source and the hunting was good for fruits and vegetables. They spent the day raiding a left-behind garden at a house and gathering as much food as they could. That night, the other travelers were around small fires. Some were singing hymns. Others were telling stories of things that had happened before the fall. There was one man, Carl, who was gifted at telling stories, and around the fire were most of the children and a few of the adults who hadn't heard all his stories before. Ray watched him as he told a story about how he'd gotten his first job and the weird people he'd worked with. Ray thought that 5 years ago he would have been telling it to a girl in a bar to try and get her to laugh and maybe go home with him. Now he was a tale weaver and the only entertainment for the group. Odd how people fall into old roles that were generally gone by the time we'd reached the 21st century. Ray grew tired of hearing about the man who made animals out of paper clips and had an entire zoo at his cubicle, wandered over to the fire that Mark was sitting at. He was talking with Joel, the leader of the group, and a few other older people. Mary was Joel's companion, had the look of an older woman who'd grown up on a farm. Her skin was tough as leather, but not unattractive, and her hair was a short mess of unruly gray and black curls. Ray hadn't learned the names of the other two men who sat beside the fire with them, and was too embarrassed to ask. One was a man who looked like a fitness model in his late 40s, with tight skin and short brown hair. The other was a dumpier-looking man who had to be at least 60. He wasn't so much a white man as a man with a beet-red face and a short shock of white hair that was thinning a little more every time Ray saw him, it seemed. "Go ahead and join us, Ray," Joel said kindly. "We were just talking about how we are almost to the end of our travels. According to the map work Mark here has done, we're less than 50 miles from Graceland." Ray sat down and said, "That must be exciting. I went to Graceland when I was first stationed in Arkansas, and it was pretty impressive. I think the gate will be a lot of use to you, but what plans do you have for keeping yourself safe in an urban area?" "The king will provide," Mary said. Ray didn't laugh. He knew that she was serious. Wrong. But serious. Mark sat up and said, "I don't know if I'm going to stay with you the whole way. The idea of Graceland's a good one, but I'm thinking of making a run for the Canadian border before winter hits hard. If I don't make it, I'll hunker down in Wisconsin or Minnesota until I can travel again." He smiled and continued, "I like that I'd get 3 to 4 months without zombies, and I hear their health care system is good." Everyone laughed at that, and then Joel said, "What about you, Ray? You've been very quiet since your first day. I know you aren't a believer, but I do think that when the king does call to you, you could be one of the most fervent of us all. You have a great strength in you, and there had to be a reason you gave up everything and found us." It appealed to him. Yeah, he thought they were all nuts for thinking that Elvis was a prophet, but the people were very different from the ones he'd spent the last 5 years with. There wasn't the rigid social stratification that there was in the army base. Everyone seemed to get along without it. Maybe it was because some sort of disagreement would have been dangerous to the group, or maybe their belief gave them a mission beyond themselves. He scratched his head and closed his eyes, trying to clear his mind to get a good idea of what he did want. Why was it he always had to tell people what he wanted to do with his life? "I left the base wanting to see if what they told me was true, that everything had collapsed. I wanted to hit the army base up in Missouri and see if anyone is there. I know we didn't hear from them, but we were ordered into radio silence when the government collapsed. I just want to know if they're going along with that order or..." He trailed off, not knowing what to think about it. Images flashed in his head of zombies breaking into the base, killing everyone there, and a commanding officer not allowing them to call for help because of orders. "I can understand that," Joel said. "But since we're almost to Graceland, I wish I could talk you two into staying with us until then. We could use your skills, and I've grown to enjoy my conversations with you. It's only another week at most, and we could set you up with food for your trip." Ray smiled at that and said, "We've been going away from where I need to go for the past few days, and I can't see where another week would be too much trouble. You can keep your food, though. You'll need it more than I will. Once you're set in place, it's harder to hunt." "Ah, but we don't have to. The king will provide. They talked in magazines all the time about how he was prepared for any emergency. Why would this be any different?" Mary asked. "The king may provide, but we will have to do the work," Joel said, looking directly into Ray's eyes, almost as if he was giving him a secret message. "If you ask him to move a mountain, you'd better bring a shovel to do the hard work." The two men who hadn't said anything nodded solemnly and said amen under their breath. Mary said, "I know that the king will help us if we do the work, showing that we are worthy of his help. But hasn't he led us to his promised land? He has brought people to us and helped them believe, and brought us hunters when we were hungry, map readers when we were lost, and children when we had lost our hope." Ray spoke first and surprised himself as he did, not thinking about what he was saying, just talking. "I don't know if he did or not, but I don't think it matters. What matters is that you've taken care of each other on a trip across the nation to find that one thing you believed in. Even if it isn't everything you hoped it would be, you will make it that because of your belief. I wish I could believe like you, but I just can't. I believe in this," he patted his gun. "No matter what you believe, you can do it because you made it this far." Joel smiled and said, "See what I mean about you, Ray? You will be a great believer, could even be a leader." "I'm no leader," Ray said. "I just take care of myself. If I wanted to be a leader, it would be easy to have been one on the army base." "That's not a leader," Joel continued. "That was a follower. Your commanding officer didn't lead people. He took an order and lived his life to follow that order. A real leader would have had you go out and expand your group to save all the people in the area. A leader wouldn't do what they did, lock themselves away and wait for someone to lead. Trust me on this one, Ray. The time will come when you will be called to lead, and you will answer that call. I just hope it is with us." "Thank you," Ray said, not knowing what to make of Joel's assessment. "Well, he's enough of a leader for me," Mark said. "I'm going to leave with you, if it's okay. I'd like to know about that army base as well. I remember it was one of the first ones where the dead started to get up and attack the living." "Maybe they're working on a way to get rid of them," Joel smiled. "Maybe. Either way, Ray, you have a gift. You just don't know it yet." Ray closed his eyes and hoped he was wrong. He didn't want to leave. He just wanted something. But what? What did he want? All this time, and he still didn't know. He knew what he didn't want. He didn't want to live cooped up with a bunch of people, even if they were the nice Elvi. He didn't want to go back. He didn't want to die. He didn't want to be alone. And he didn't want to be with the same people all the time. Before the fall, he just wanted a decent job and enough time to drink beer, watch football, and get laid a few times a week. The conversation became a lot less important after that, with Joel telling stories about his old work days, and Mary telling stories about Elvis that seemed like myth and couldn't have been true. The president named him to the FBI during the war in Vietnam. He gave away cars to people and watched three TVs at once because he heard the president did it. Ray didn't laugh at her, though, because she was so serious and full of conviction. It didn't matter if the stories were true or not. She believed in them. After she went to bed, Joel was quick to follow. Ray didn't remember when the two quiet men went away, but he was left alone at the fire with Mark. "You really want to go to the base with me?" Ray asked. "Sure," Mark said. "I've just been going from house to house on my own for the past few years. I joined up with these people because they had more of a sense of purpose than just making it through another day. They worry about food and shelter, too, but there's more to them than that. That and I doubt you'll wake up every morning by singing My Way, so I think you're a little preferable to what they do." They both laughed at that and decided that they would travel to Graceland before heading to that base in Missouri. Charles didn't like the fact that the children were outside, but with Alice and Angela out there, he was able to tear himself away from the window and get back to work on supper. He liked Alice and Angela, but it was pretty easy to tell that they were uncomfortable about the kids. He'd been running around playing girl soldier for quite a few years and hadn't even been around kids long enough to learn that you don't talk to them like they were idiots. The kids were cleaning out the garden, since this was going to be the last meal they would have in the house. At first, Alice had said it was a bad idea for them to travel with the kids, but he figured that Angela must have laid the law down, because that morning she came to him, said that they had changed their minds, and would help him get the kids to a new house or a settlement. They had told him that they wanted to wait just one day before taking off in case their friend was still alive and trying to find them. He knew there wasn't much hope. But when there's no body, no confirmation, it's hard to just walk away. It was odd when they talked about their friend Wendy, since he could feel the guilt weighing heavily on them. He didn't pry, thinking about how he was still dealing with his own guilt over Vic. But it helped him start to put that guilt into a small box at the back of his mind and deal with getting ready to leave. They had already put together backpacks with sleeping bags, food, and other things they would need. Alice had told them that they should lock the house up so that no zombies could get in, and another bunch of people would be able to use the house, even if it was just for a few nights. Outside, he could hear the kids talking about letting the animals go, saving only one of the pigs and one of the sheep for tonight. It would be too much food, but it would be hard to find decent food while they were traveling, so they might as well have a big feast if they were leaving in the morning. The border collie they'd used for a pet and a guard dog, Duke, was standing by the fence and looking off in the distance, not moving. That struck him as odd. Normally, if the kids were outside, Duke was playing with them. Well, not Rich, who never cared at all for the dog. Charles looked off in the direction the dog was looking, but didn't see anything. He waited a bit, watching the dog, seeing what it was going to do. Nothing. Duke just stood there, silent and still, staring out into the woods. Charles decided it would make him feel better to grab a shotgun and at least see what Duke was so intent upon watching. He checked to make sure the shotgun was full, grabbed extra shells, and walked outside. The very second he was out of the house, Sarah saw him and started running toward the house. Alice noticed him next and said, "What is it?" Alice noticed him next and said, "What is it?" while grabbing the gun she'd laid down. The other kids noticed that the adults were getting tense and started moving toward the house themselves. Angela picked up her gun as well. Charles didn't say anything but just pointed at Duke, who was still standing by the fence, staring off into the woods, his ears perked up, starting to curl his lips into a low growl. Alice and Angela checked the ammo in their guns as they slowly moved over to the fence next to Duke. When Charles got there, he leaned down next to the dog and patted him on the side. Duke was mostly black, with a tuft or two of white around his feet, a white muzzle, and white fur around his neck. The dog, which was such a good playmate for the kids, now looked as if it was going to kill. It didn't move at all when Charles patted it on the side, and he wondered what it could be that was making the dog act so scared. He didn't have to wait long. He heard a twig snap in the woods, and Duke lunged at the fence, barking and growling. He and the women all dropped to one knee so as to aim their guns better, and watched. Alice was the first to see them. That's right. them. The first couple came out of the woods and she fired, dropping the first and staggering the second. Then, the zombies started coming out of the woods. It looked like there were over 100 of them. They started shooting as fast as they could, but they were going to be too many of them. As they started dropping, Charles shouted, "Get back to the house!" Alice started to back up, not stopping her gunfire, while Angela simply turned and ran. But not for the house. Charles yelled, "What are you doing?" Angela didn't slow as she yelled, "The front gate! We're letting the animals go, so the front gate is open!" That's when fear gripped him. He was still next to Duke, and he grabbed Duke's collar and turned the dog toward the front gate and said, "Go! Sick 'em!" The dog took off like a shot. He also saw that zombies could sense somehow the front gate was open and started moving toward it. He fired a few more shotgun blasts into the mass of them, hoping it would slow them down, but for every one that fell, it looked like two more took its place. He glanced over at the gate, and Angela had closed it and was trying to wrap the wire around the mesh in order to get it sealed. But there were about 5 zombies close enough to push their way through. Fired at one of them, and it dropped. But the other 4 got their hands on the gate before she could get it completely wired shut. They were pushing and clawing at the gate as she slowly started backing away. Duke was right at the gate, barking and leaping into it to try and bite the zombies. Duke was right at the gate, barking and leaping into it to try and bite the zombies' hands that were tearing at the wire mesh. The wire that was holding the gate closed was already starting to unravel. Angela fired into the growing crowd of zombies, causing some of them to pull back, but not enough. The wire strained against their pushing, and Charles yelled, "Give it up! Get in the house!" By this time, Alice had given up shooting anymore and was running at the house at full speed. Charles was still firing into the crowd of zombies at the gate, trying to get some decent headshots. Angela was backing away slowly, firing into the crowd as well, but she wasn't even trying to hit them in the head. She was just spraying them with bullets, causing a few to stagger, but none were dropping because of her gunshots. Charles paused a second, watching what was happening, and he actually saw the wire she had used to close the gate pull free. "Angela!" he screamed, trying to get her to quit firing and to run for the house. Alice did the same, and Charles turned to see that she was inside the front door, holding it open, but ready to close it when the zombies got too close. Maybe it was the shock of their voice, but in that instance, Angela came out of her near-trance-like state, turned, and started running for the house. Duke was leaping and biting at the zombies, running back after each bite, making sure they wouldn't grab him. Charles fired at the ones near Duke and called for the dog to join him, but it didn't listen. It was running back and forth, to and fro, almost as if it was trying to herd the zombies, till one of them got in a lucky blow and knocked the dog to the ground. Charles couldn't look. He turned away and thundered up the stairs to the front door, getting inside the house. He saw the kids standing by the windows. "Get in the basement!" he yelled. Then he turned to make sure that Angela was on her way. She made it up the stairs right behind him, and when she got in the house, she turned to fire a couple more times into the zombies. Then she froze. Alice looked confused and followed her gaze, and then said, "Oh my God, no." Her face filling with fear. Charles looked out the window and saw nothing unusual, except that there was a woman in the front of the group that looked like the lost friend they had described. She had the pale gray skin of a zombie and a large black wound in her neck. He couldn't imagine what they were going through, but he knew they had to make sure that they were safe. He ran back to the door and fired again, causing the female zombie's head to explode in a black mist. "Shut the door!" he screamed, and watched in silence as Alice slammed the door and locked it. He turned and started toward the basement as Alice and Angela put the braces in place on the front door. It wouldn't hold very long, but maybe long enough for them all to get into the basement. Charles grabbed the other guns and ammo that were in the living room and ran down the hallway to the basement door. The kids were still waiting at the door, watching in horror. He gave them guns and ammo and shooed them downstairs. He could hear pounding at the front door. It was pretty easy to tell it wouldn't hold up to such power for very long. "Get back here!" he yelled at Alice and Angela. He heard a couple more gunshots and really hoped they were firing out the window in the front door. He heard the pounding continue, so he knew the door was still holding. He ran back down the hall until he could see into the living room, saw that Alice was holding the door shut with her body while Alice was firing out the small window inside the door. "Forget it! Head for the basement!" he yelled. "We can't. They've already broken the lock. If I let this go, they'll be in," Angela said. "Shit," he said, and leveled his gun at the door. "On my mark, let it go and head for the basement. You can make it." They looked worried, but he glared at the door, his wild gray hair nearly covering his face. "Do it!" he yelled, and with that both the women let go of the door and took off running. The door flew open and fell off its hinges from the force of the bodies behind it. Some of the bodies fell as their forward momentum carried them too fast for their legs to follow. He started firing, aiming high and hoping to take out a few zombie heads as he did. Angela and Alice ran past him, and he saw by that time there were at least 10 zombies through the door, still moving toward him. When the women got past him, he fired one last time, and then turned and ran to the basement as well. When he got there, they were running down the stairs. He grabbed the wood needed to bar the door, turned around, and tried to slam it. But there were gray, dead hands in the way. He put the gun in the crack being held open by the zombies and fired. The hands were gone, and he shut the door, putting all the locks and braces into place. Immediately, he could hear the pounding on the other side, and from down in the basement itself, he could hear the children crying. He couldn't tell which of them were crying. It was at least two of them. Then he could hear Angela's voice trying to soothe them. He heard footsteps behind him, and Alice was right behind him in an instant, helping him secure the door. Oddly, the one thing that leaped into his mind was he glad he'd refilled the water stores the day after they got out of the basement the last time. Since they were packing to leave, all of their supplies were in the basement. "Did you turn off the iron? It would be bad if a fire started on top of all the other crap we're dealing with," Alice said, a grin on her face when they got the door completely closed. He laughed. A sense of pure relief washed over him as he slumped down next to the door. The pounding on the other side was louder, but he didn't worry about it. This was one of the secured basements people had bought during the year before everything went dark. It would hold. "At least that's what you'll tell yourself," a small voice in the back of his head said. He went down the stairs slowly and stopped at the bottom to sit on the last step. As he did, Martin and Sarah ran to him and crawled into his lap. He hugged them close and saw that Angela had her arm around Jesse, but Martin was sitting alone in the corner, far away from everyone, and clutching his legs to his chest. "It's okay now. We're safe," he said, hoping that by saying it, it would be true. The pounding on the door betrayed him a few seconds later, as they could hear the pounding get louder. He had no idea how long the door would hold up. It didn't matter how reinforced it was if they beat on it long enough, and those bastards never got tired. His earlier sense of relief was now gone. He told the children to get into the closet and hide while he grabbed his gun and went over to the stairs where Angela and Alice were sitting. They were staring at the floor as the pounding continued. Alice looked at the floor, and Angela said, "How long do you think the door will hold?" "Don't know," he said quietly, making sure the children couldn't hear him. "It's reinforced with steel, but if they pound on it long enough and hard enough, they'll rip the metal out of its wooden housing. It may hold a few days, or maybe just a few hours. Most of the reinforced basements were well made. Let's hope this one is too." "And there's no other way out?" Alice asked, not looking up. "No. There was another door, but they filled in the way outside with concrete. They must not have been able to reinforce that door as well." They fell into silence after that. No way out, and the house was now filled with zombies. He thought about how Duke had tried to protect him, felt his eyes misting up again. Over a dog? A dog? They were days, maybe hours from dying, and he felt sad about a dog? The tears must have been visible since Angela reached over and put a hand on his shoulder. He looked over at her, and she said, "I'm sorry I let them in. I just saw Wendy, and it stopped. It all stopped. Time just stopped." It was her, but her eyes were dead. That poor girl. Her neck was ripped open, and she just kept walking toward me. Her gait was the same as when she was alive. Exactly the same as when she was alive. How is that possible? They sat in silence again. Once in a while, one of the thumps on the door would be so strong they could hear something shift in the door, as if it were moving out of place. Maybe they wouldn't even have hours. Then, as suddenly it began, it ended. The pounding stopped. They looked at each other, and then up at the door. Before anyone could say anything, they heard a voice from behind the door. "Don't you want to send the children out to play?" It was the voice of the zombie that had killed Vic. Charles's eyes grew wide with horror. as he could tell it was the same voice, filled with rot and evil, distorted as if coming from two speakers out of sync. "Send the children out, and I'll let the rest of you go. You don't have a chance. I have over 100 with me up here, and we never get tired, and we never need sleep, and they will pound on this door as long as they think they can get the tasty morsels behind it. You really don't have a choice. I'm giving the adults down there a chance to live. Besides, what sort of world are you letting them live in? They're obsolete. We're stronger, faster, live longer, and are just getting smarter. I was one of them for years, but now I'm easily smarter than any of you." There was a laugh at the top of the stairs, and the sound of it made Charles's blood go cold. "Look at it this way. I'm up here, and you're down there, with no way out. I scouted the house and made sure there was no way out of the safe room. I know it's hard to admit you're defeated, but it happens. Just think of it this way. I'm sure the last Neanderthal thought it was just as clever as the first Cro-Magnon. But the Cro-Magnon finally won out, didn't it? I'll give you an hour. Then..." The voice behind the door paused, the pause itself causing cold sweat to bead up on the back of Charles's neck. "Then they start pounding again, and they won't stop until they get to the soft candy center. If you know what I mean." There was silence for a moment. Then the voice spoke again. "And ladies? My name is Eddie. I'm the one who, well, turned your friend into a candidate for becoming one of us. You'd be happy to know that she struggled even when she'd lost. That's why I didn't let them turn her into dinner. She's up here now. At the rate I got my intelligence, I'm guessing she'll be able to talk to you again in about 5 years. Unless you join her. Or maybe I'll let them tear you apart with their bare hands while you're still alive. I hear that the brain can even process for a while after the head is torn from the body, so that you can see them devouring you. Think about that, then think about my offer. It's not like they are your children." That is part 9. Part 10 is in 2 weeks, the conclusion of After the Fall. When After the Fall is complete, I will be making it into an electronic book that you can buy on Amazon. I also will be starting 2 weeks after that with a new novel, a coming-of-age novel called All In. It is very different in tone, very different in plot, but it'll be done the same way. I'll be turning it into an audiobook and then putting it together as an electronic book. I have decided to add ads to the Novelcast, and here they are. Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, and your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world, and remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right, those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors. And for those of you listening, I do other podcasts. I do a podcast called Crazy Comics and Stories over at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. where myself, my friend Joe Ryder, and once in a while my friend Jin Wicked get together and talk comic books. Every week, every Monday, that podcast comes out. I also have a solo podcast that comes out, pretty much randomly, called Solitaire Rose Radio, which is part of that feed. I also started a news parody called the Weekly News Update, and that's at weeklynewsupdate.solitairerose.com. That comes out every Tuesday. Well, except when I miss a deadline like I did this week. But it comes out every week, usually on Tuesday. It's 10 to 15 minutes, and it's a parody of what's going on in the news. It is a rebirth of a news parody I did for 10 years, starting in 1996. And I'd really appreciate it if you would head over there, listen to it, and tell your friends. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends. Let people know what we're doing over here at Solitaire Rose Networks. I want to thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with the conclusion of After the Fall.